When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Dwight York, goal-scoring great, slightly less great in the eyes of Katie Price. Played for United, Villa, Blackburn, Birmingham and Sunderland. Won the treble with United, the League Cup with Villa, played at the 2006 World Cup with Trinidad and Tobago, first non-English player to join the Premier League 100 club, created plenty of headlines off the pitch with certain high-profile romances, plus author. But what will the book club think of his 2009 book, Born to Score? Find out in today's Football Book Club.
It feels like a sort of a modern-day retelling of the Aeneid.
Hey, no references to actual books. Come on.
I would go and have a great night out and end up with a woman who would then be left amazed by me getting out of bed after sex to do 100 sit-ups and press-ups.
It's got goals. It's got shagging. He's hanging out with Brian Lara. A surprising amount.
The big three.
Did you know that Guy Ritchie was caught by that guy called Cycling Mikey?
Oh, what a freaky thing to do, Bozzy. Save some of that spanking for me.
Hello and welcome to Football Book Club, the only book club where, instead of literary classics, each episode we read another footballer's autobiography. Less Gillian Flynn, more Niall Quinn.
Oh!
Mm. Yeah, that's all right.
Mm. That happened.
Yeah.
And a Gone Girl reference, I like.
Yes, very, very, very much.
Because Niall Quinn turned up in Gone Girl, yes, I remember it well.
Niall Quinn did what to Rosamund Pike? Thank you to superfan Old Crabtree. Remember him? For that one.
Old Crabtree!
Yeah. Crabtree is old and alive. I'm James Buck, and over this series you've read such classics as David Ginola's Le Magnifique, Ashley Cole's My Defence, and Alan Brazil's There's a Lot of Bubbly in Brazil.
Fuck.
I know. What were you thinking?
When you say it out loud, I know. Like, it just makes it clear
real roll
how
call.
Much of our life we've wasted.
Yeah, disaster. And today we're reading another classic of the genre, Dwight York's explosive 2009 book, Born to Score. And joining me to read it are Jack Bernhardt.
Hello.
Natasha Frisco.
Hello.
And, okay.
Set the tone, yeah. Right?
Well,
you know what you did, James.
Yeah. It's not me. Dwight wrote the book. And and James Belgium.
Hi.
Welcome, everyone, to the last episode of Series 5.
Series 5. It feels like Series 27, honestly.
That wasn't the myth that was meant to be... That was the expectation I wanted to get. Sorry, the reaction. Well, the reaction I wanted to get was, oh, like sad, but you were like, this is the fifth series.
Yeah. What? Have we been cancelled yet? Yeah. Surely.
Yeah, sad. Clearly not.
No.
Yeah.
No. I am sad. But for a different reason. No, it's I like reading these books. Well, I like chatting to you. I don't like reading these books. I like chatting to you.
Yes.
And this, I've been told many times, is the only condition. This is the condition of your friendship.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Has to be through Zoom, and it has to be. Yeah. Has to be after having read a book by Dwight York.
Yeah. Please, do you want to know about my kids? No, I want to know what you think of Andy Townsend.
Dwight York's kids? Yes. Jeff Bernhardt's kids? No.
No.
Preconceptions of the book. Preconceptions of Dwight.
Wow. That's an interesting question.
Yes.
I have something to say, first of all. I met him.
Oh.
Have you?
My mum reminded me of this. So I told her we were doing this and she said, do you not remember? I was like 14 and I was getting the train to London to see my dad. Don't pull that face, Jack. It's not going where you think.
I heard him say,
and my dad used to live in London. I was on the train from Stoke to Euston and he was sat opposite me.
Wow.
And apparently, I did not remember this, but I told my mum, he went and got me a can of Coke. So I do think he's a bit of a prick, but he did buy me a can of Coke.
That's very sweet. Actually, Tash, just something I remember from the book, and don't take this the wrong way, but there is a moment in the book where Dwight York says one of the first things he did in London, in England, when he went to Villa, was he ran past an old man, and then he went and got him an ice cream. He said he does it because that's what they do in Trinidad and Tobago for like the vulnerable.
Well, to be fair, it was back in the day where if you were under 16, they made you sit with a chaperone.
What?
So he probably thought, yeah,
Did you grow up in the 19th century?
And it was a horse driving the car.
Yeah. Maybe I was younger. I don't know. It was me on the train, and Virgin trains used to make you sit.
Really?
Like, yeah.
Was it a Virgin Cola?
Yeah, for virgins like me.
That was a sweet bit, I will say. When
there was a Virgin Cola, right? And Buzz.
Yeah, there was.
Remember Panda Pops?
He probably did think I was vulnerable, you know, if I was a little kid getting
true.
A train on my
that
own.
That is true. That so, is true. Yeah. Technically, you were vulnerable.
It clocks.
That's a nice story.
However, that said, I did come in with this, you know, preconceived notions, ready to change my mind, strong opinions, loosely held and all that. But I still think he's a massive twat.
There we go. No, despite the cola, he could have bought you 1,000 colas and you still would have thought
he could have bought me anything.
Absolute waste of time buying you
cola. Yeah, waste of time.
I will say that when that story, you know, where it was like, I bought an old man an ice cream and the old man was like, this is the greatest day of my life. And he was just like, that's just what I do. I will say I didn't think that story was true. But
the fact
that he bought you a cola makes me think that maybe it is true.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I did think it was true because I think he does respect men. But not
men and children only.
Yes, yeah. I think that's
not his own children, but other people's.
Well, we don't know. Again, this is being very.
Well, how are we?
He says he's very. Now we're getting to this. He's very. I guess the preconceptions then, Tash. Me, Jack, and James. Not to make too many assumptions. Probably more associating with the Champions League. The treble winning Man United team.
The treble winning season.
Slightly more with tabloid side of Dwight's life.
Yes. Okay. Correct. Fair. Correct.
And the sort of, that 99 season, basically, 98-99 season is it, really.
Exactly.
Just him as just goal scoring machine. And Andy Cole. Best pals with Andy Cole.
Right.
If you ignore
you
the
Andy's
terrible
book.
Stuff, he's a great guy.
Well, the book is good for all four of us, actually, because it does promises to put the message straight on his career, his relationships, and his relationship with his son Harvey as well. Can it do that successfully? Let's find out as we read Born to Score. So, over the show, we're going to go into more depth about the book and lots of other fun things to celebrate our final episodes. But first, let's see what Amazon is saying. The book has 4.3 stars from 52 reviews, including this 5-star 52. Review from Gav, entitled Top Man Yorkie. And I will say this is a very liberal use of capital letters.
Okay.
This book is an capital E excellent read. Some stories that leave you amazed. This man has had the life that most of us can only dream of. Some of the stories about the football and the women he bedded, all capitals, are hilarious. Only Yorkie could do it. Highly recommend. That's what Gav thinks of it. But what do you all think of it?
Recommend! Do I recommend? That's a good question. Do I highly, all capital letters, recommend? This is a good question. I think going through the sort of like, what did I think before going in? I was expecting it to be a lot. Well, it's obviously incredibly laddie and incredibly naughty and incredibly, but there is also quite an interesting theme running through it about the concept of fate the concept of destiny mm-hmm. and the sort of the battles that York went through. And I think it's actually it's a very well written book.
I agree.
It starts in an amazing way. It starts with him like being mugged, and there's a bit where he comes across as like Sherlock Holmes,
Buddha.
You know in the Funky Buddha. You know the Guy Ritchie Sherlock Holmes where he's like, I can see the door behind me. Yes. It's 600 meters. If I punch him this hard in the face, then his nose will explode. There's a bit where he sort of does that, where he's like, I can see them outside. They're going to jump over these people. I knew those people were there. I jump over them as well. We run through the streets. He's like fucking James Bond. Mm-hmm. He's James Bond. Mm-hmm. So it's quite exciting, except that it ends with him, catching them, this mugger, and York like, kicking him.
He drop kicks him, he says. Yeah.
Drop kicks him. Yeah. He gets really angry. And then the police are like, whoa, Yorkie's like, hey, it's okay. It's okay. I'm not going to do it again. He turns. And then as soon as they let him go, he punches the guy in the face again. Which is very funny.
I agree.
So it's quite a high octane, quite exciting start. And obviously, you know, there's a lot of graphic descriptions of his sex life, which mm-hmm. I didn't care for.
No.
But if you can sort of ignore that,
which is like difficult because it is
like
a lot of
noughties culture. Yeah. If you can ignore that, then it's good.
I do kind of agree with that because I don't know if this is actually how I feel about literature anymore. But when we read books, we're so often given really beige ones which just tell the story of their life, blah 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 blah. This one, in fair play to it rattles through. It really does. Mm. Like for a book that's quite long.
He rattles through, I think you mean.
Yeah.
Oi, oi.
It's about, it's what, like 330 pages or so. And it does, it does quite fly by. It's got loads of things in it that kind of make it, you know, either good or, you know, so bad it's good at times. It's got goals. It's got shagging. He's hanging out with Brian Lara. A surprising amount.
The big three.
Yeah, the big
I would
three.
Say things I want. If you've got two of those things in your book,
you're onto a winner.
You're onto a winner, and he's got all three. Yeah. Really. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but I do. But I mean,
in a pitching books nowadays.
Yeah. Like... Okay, sure. Yeah. But where's the Brian Lara? Where's the shagging? I do think that structure wise is very interesting because the treble in this series, in fact, in the most recent series of Football Book Club, mm-hmm. The show that you're currently listening to,
what number is that, James?
What series?
Yep.
Five.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep. Sorry,
27.
Yeah.
No, we've done the treble actually quite a few times with like Roy Keane and Teddy Sheringham
yes.
and Dwight York. And what's interesting is everyone's reaction to it is slightly different. And what's interesting about this book is what I thought it was going to be and what I think a more boring book would be you start with Barcelona 1999 and say, that's the high point. It was great. Mm-hmm. And actually, the structure of the book is completely different to that.
Yep.
That happens in like chapter 6, I want to say, like mm-hmm. of 22. Mm-hmm. Like he's very... It's a very well-structured book in the sense that, like, very exciting things happen, but he knows where to... I say he, ghostwriter, mm-hmm. or whoever sort of structured this book, knows, like, how to frame it so it's not just, like, I was a football player who wasn't doing particularly well, and then I met Alex Ferguson, and I won the treble. The end. Like,
yep.
There's definitely... there are many interesting themes and questions that come through this book.
It focuses more on the unraveling, really, of his career.
Yes, which is kind of
explain away his media reputation a little bit.
Yeah, which I will say, it also doesn't come across. I think there are times where it definitely comes across as a I need to undo the hatchet job that he perceives has been done on him by Katie Price, mm-hmm. and I have to do a hatchet job on her.
Yes.
Which is horrible, really horrible to read. But like. Also within that there's a really interesting sort of question of what does it mean to achieve, really. Mm-hmm. There's a sort of an interesting thing of like, once he's achieved everything at Manchester United, which he does in his first season, there's kind of like a question of like, what now, what next? And that is fascinating, and I don't think we've ever sort of read a book where that has been so explicit. And so I in that sense I really enjoyed it.
Oh, very good. Tash, James, big thoughts? We can hold it back. It can be a slow unraveling.
No. I mean, I don't think it's going to be a surprise to any of you that I actually found parts of this really difficult to read, like more difficult than I thought I would. I thought I'd kind of see it, you know, when we read the Colleen book, and we've read loads of books where they kind of talk about women in that way, and it's whatever, you know, it was part of the culture back then. But he is really, really dark about some of the things that he says about Katie Price. And then I looked at, like, at the time, what was going on, and she's doing it to him. And it's just, there is something fascinating about this period of pop culture, because it was like the internet was there, so, and people were saying whatever they wanted, but we hadn't yet got to a point where people were almost being cancelled for doing anything. So you would say stuff with complete like free will. You would just say it out loud. And he's doing it in this book, which is really unfortunate, because it's stuck in 2009 and there's nothing he can do to take it back. And I'm not saying he would want to take it back, but it's just kind of hard to, I was trying not to read it with my sort of 2024 glasses on, but it is quite painful. And I think he, having seen some stuff that he's been doing, I kind of looked what he's doing now, I do think he might regret some of it. I do think he probably did take it a bit far. Although I did see Joey Barton invited him on his podcasts this week. So,
oh God. Joey Barton's just working his way through Football Book Club Heroes and taking them all down. It's terrible.
Yeah, but I mean,
be able to have a series six.
Don't worry, Joey Barton will have us on the podcast.
I didn't expect to like it or him, but I think it was darker than I thought it was going to be. And I think he went to depths that we've never seen before in a footballer's autobiography.
Interesting.
I do. It is a weirdly, like, there's the sort of football side of it, which is very interesting. And then there's the women's side of it. And this particular, as you say, the Katie Price stuff, which is really grim.
The split would be more like, I read someone, I can't remember who it was, there was a pundit who said he's only bought this book out because he's trying to stay relevant. And I kind of think that might be the case, because there's the percentage of his life versus football is completely the opposite to what I thought it would be. Like, there's so much about his life.
Yeah, that is true.
Right from the beginning.
I agree with that. I was surprised how little.
And all of the incredible things he achieved in football are kind of secondary to him, to the gossip.
Do you think that's just because, you know, everything has been tabloid war for so many years? This is finally his chance in one big thing to get across his point of view on that. That's largely how I saw it.
It was, you know, it was serialized in the newspapers. You're not going to get that if you're talking about winning the treble. You're not going to get all of those opportunities.
But I think it probably is just trying to put to bed some of the things with his children and put to bed.
I think that's true. There's also a lot of bitterness within it, though.
Of course.
I'm not saying this is not how you deal with this horrible situation. I did not realize how terrible the back and forth between them was. It's really grim. And it's,
well, we'll save that lightness for later. That little bit.
That's coming up.
James, you know, thoughts on, you know, culture in stuff?
Well, I have to say, I actually think it's the best opening of a book we might have ever read, that first bit. That Guy Ritchie bit.
Better than Carl Douglas was Kung Fu Fighting.
What was that?
That was last week.
That was Joey Joachim last week.
Oh, I thought you said Carl Douglas. I was like, who the hell's Carl?
Yeah,
he wrote
Kung Fu Fighting.
Come on, keep up.
Yeah, what?
Don't you remember who wrote Kung Fu Fighting?
No. We literally recorded this episode 4 days ago, James.
Oh my God.
It was, and we found out that Carl Douglas's Kung Fu Fighting came out on the same day as your birthday.
Julian Joachim was fighting his way through his mother's womb.
Who's the footballer Carl? Who, what did you call him?
Carl Doug. Oh my God! Someone needs to go back and listen to Kung Fu Fighting a few times. You clearly aren't
familiar
enough with
everyone was Kung Fu Fighting, James. Someone was not. Yeah.
This kid's not fast as lightning.
Yeah.
Sorry, James.
Oh man. Whew. I can't remember what I was saying. Guy Ritchie? Something about Guy Ritchie?
No, but it is proper Guy Ritchie. I do agree.
It is. Yeah. I had a thought when you were saying that. Doesn't he say that he owes, at some point in this book, he says he owes everything to Vinnie Jones, right? I think there's some.
Yes, he does.
Oh, yeah.
But Vinnie Jones owes everything to Guy Ritchie.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
He also brags about hanging out with the guys from Lockstock. Like, he's got a real thing going on.
He,
oh, it's It's very late 90s, early noughties.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a spectacular scene, which I want to mention later.
Also, did you know that Guy Ritchie was given driving ban? He was caught by that guy called Cycling Mikey.
No, was he?
You know, have you seen that Cycling Mikey guy?
Yeah.
Did you accidentally read Guy Ritchie's book?
I just read this recently. Guy Ritchie was caught by that guy, and he was given a 6 month driving.
Who is Cycling Mikey?
He's that like Jeremy Vine esque sort of. But he's like, I think he's like a Dutch guy who just literally spends all day every day going around trying to catch people on their phones in their cars, handing it over to police.
There we go,
little nerd. Where's we got Guy Ritchie.
That was the least strong opinion on a book I've ever heard.
Oh yeah, book was all right. Yeah,
yeah. I do agree. It is pretty well written, and I did have a dig around for a ghostwriter, and I couldn't find one. So either he's hidden him very well,
I think he's
not in my book anywhere.
Yeah, I couldn't see anything.
They normally credit them, don't they?
Martin Swain.
Where?
Oh, literally the last sentence. Finally, a big thank you goes to Martin Swain, who helped me with this project. He first interviewed me when I had just stepped off the plane to join Villa all those years ago, and I doubt you could have imagined the story that followed. He's done me proud shaping the book at such short notice.
Oh, well done, Martin Swain, because it is a very well-written book. It is.
Shout out to Martin Swain.
Yeah. Good work.
Although,
can you please help me with all of my womanizing?
Yeah. I need it. Although, I must say, chapter 5 being called Football, Football, Football. It's so lazy and really funny.
Do you think he had some like really clickbaity titles as chapter titles as well?
Yes. Yeah.
And a lot of them were, towards the end especially, they were like, I don't know what to call this one. We'll just call it the last sentence in the chapter. Because there are two, which is during Trinidad and Tobago's World Cup.
Yeah.
Even God must have been dancing.
Oh, yes. Went, like,
even God must have been dancing. That'll do. Yeah. That'll be the chapter title.
It's a good chapter.
And the one before it was... what was the one before?
Was it Schmeichel's cigar? That's the one that annoyed me because you're like, what's this cigar? Funny story with the Schmeichel's cigar? It just wasn't. He just still had it in his mouth at the end of all the shenanigans.
I was called. It was the 4 day party. Was the other one, which was literally it's almost at the end of the chapter. It's clear like Martin was like, why are we calling this one 4 day party? And he was like, oh yeah, because I had a 4 day party. Anyway, next chapter.
Jack, I know there's something you wanted to talk about, though.
No, so I do think, I was saying before, you know, it's about, this book is a lot about destiny, and it's interesting because I wouldn't necessarily have thought that about Dwight York, but like, a big thing about this book is the fact, he says, that when he was 3 years old, he was in a car accident that was nearly fatal.
Mm-hmm. It sounds extremely like it should have been fatal.
It sounds extremely fatal. He does sort of say that his family have told the story many, many times. It's getting more and more embellished.
Yes.
He was like, the car was going 60 miles an hour. It was a monster truck. It ran me over 7 times.
Yeah, he was dragged underneath it for like 100 meters.
Yeah, dragged underneath him. Like his back was burned by the exhaust. It's a really horrible story. Mm. And it's like, but what's interesting, I mean, it's there are two interesting things that come out of this. One is that he was saved by someone he refers to as only the Chinaman.
Yes.
Which
very, very strange.
Very strange. Sort of ethnically insensitive.
Yep.
I mean, I the fact he also is like, this Chinese guy appeared, apparently.
And he convinced
he
me to invest
like...
in a restaurant with him until in Leicester.
Well, <geez.
Yeah. laughs> That was my first thought when I read it.
No, but he sort of says, like, this guy was behind him being like, I'm the Chinaman. He fixed his injuries, and then he was never seen again. I think he must have been just, like, a tourist who gave him, like, a plaster and then was like, there you go, kid. See ya.
Yes. Or he's definitely a tourist. He could have been a doctor, I guess, right?
He could have been a doctor. Oh no, I don't doubt the injury was serious, but I like the idea that they're just a guy being like, I'm going home tomorrow. I'm just gonna, you know, help you and then I'm gonna go. And they're like, and we never saw him again, this mysterious Chinaman. One word. Horrible.
Yes.
The other thing that's interesting is that from that point on, he has a special sort of like a magical voice in the back of his head that's always saying, this is your second chance, Dwight. You have to take your second chance. Mm. You got to take your second chance, Dwight. And it means that for the first like 20 years of his life, he's extremely driven and he believes that he's been put on this earth to do something great in football. And those things include doing keepy uppy headers in a bin.
Yep, we get more depth on that finally. That which was revealed by Julian Joachim last week as well.
Yeah. He tricks a guy into giving him some boots, which sounds by doing 100 headers, like head balls. Which sounds like the kind of thing that would be in a video game. Do you know what I mean?
as a
side quest. Yeah, I'll be like, if you can do this, I'll give you this special item.
Literally, what does that... I kept thinking about that story. What does the shopkeeper get out of that? Like, it can't be that fun to watch a kid in a bin doing head-ups that's worth 100 quid boots or whatever they are.
But also, even if he can't do it, the guy would be like, okay, I don't get anything now. I get to see a kid be sad? Great. But then, like, there are other... So, I mean, obviously, Dwight York has a reputation as being very smiley, very, like, you know, like, being the sort of the cheeky chappy of the footballing world.
Yep.
But, like, he doesn't drink until he's 21, and he's, like, he's sort of...
He makes
very,
up for
very
it
driven
afterwards.
When he's younger. Yeah. Oh, sure. Certainly.
Yeah.
But, like, he... There's a story about when the Trinidad and Tobago coach... sees him drinking like once, he goes up to him and slaps him in the face and says like, don't throw your talent away, Dwight. And Dwight's like, yeah, in the back of my head it was saying the second chance, mm-hmm. second chance. And then he goes to Aston Villa and he does well, and then he gets the thing to go to every important moment in his life, there's the voice in the back of his head saying, this is your second chance, you've got to make something of your life, you've got to take it. And I feel like I said before, in a normal book, that would have been enough. That would have been like, the second chance told me I had to sort of do really, really well. Then I took my second chance. I won the treble. Hooray! But actually what happens is he wins the treble. Hooray. And then after that, he's basically like, what do I do now? Like, it feels almost like that voice in the back of his head that was saying, this is your second chance. You got to make the most of it. Sort of when he wins the treble is like, yep, you're done.
Yes.
You've achieved. Mm-hmm. You don't need to do anything else now. And there's a joke that he makes to Alex Ferguson, which is like, he sort of says to Alex Ferguson, wow, I need a year off after that. And Alex Ferguson's like, good one, Dwight. And Dwight's like, I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
like I literally don't know what to do with my life now. Now that I've won the treble,
that is actually really interesting for that.
It's really interesting.
At the time, yeah, it's kind of overwhelming. It's so overwhelming for him that he could come from such humble beginnings to that, basically. Yeah.
To that. And then suddenly you're like, okay, like in a way it happens both too late in his career to sort of like to change his trajectory of his career. Like it's sort of the peak and it's obviously not going to be topped. Mm. So you're sort of like, where do I go from here? And also it happens, if it happened earlier, maybe it would have been like, okay, like David Beckham, you sort of like, it's your defining thing and then you go on to even greater things. It's sort of fascinating and it does kind of like, it does sort of mean that he is, it raises an interesting question about destiny, which is once you've fulfilled your destiny, what is your purpose? Mm-hmm. If you've been driven by this thing, you no longer have your destiny has been fulfilled. Do you just retire? Do you do nothing? Do you like go into the void? It's kind of, it feels like a sort of a modern day retelling of the Aeneid. You know, like a sort of this quest.
No references to actual books. Come on. No.
You know, he's been told, like, this is the thing you're going to achieve. He achieves it. And then he's like, what now? Mm. Obviously, it's like the Aeneid, but with fucking.
And 3 years in Sunderland.
I do agree with you, Jack, though, because I feel like he doesn't know where his home is anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he feels a little bit...
Full Nelly Furtado'd.
Yeah, he has, and he's just...
That was a real slow burner.
It was a good one, though.
It was good. But yeah,
But it's not... But what's weird is that it should... It's not even like sort of Jermaine Pennant or like these other football books where you're like, oh God, he had such talent and he wasted it. Because he didn't waste it. It's just this weird thing where he's like, he's achieved everything and he doesn't know what to do. And it does just, it leaves him unmoored. And as you said, and that's sort of then when the problems begin with...
And he's not that young when it happens. Sorry, Jack, you were going to say.
No, it's true. He isn't that young. And so, I think that's an important thing. There isn't the drive to go, I've got to go, you know, I've got to now go on and do even more great mm-hmm. things. He doesn't have the Roy Keane personality of I can never be happy, therefore I have to keep on trying. He's kind of like, well, that's it. I've sort of, you know, like I was spurred on by this voice in the back of my head and Brian Lara, those two things.
Yeah.
And now Brian Lara's sort of, you know, he's like, well, you've done everything. And the voice is sort of gone. It means that the years afterwards, when he gets mugged in the Funky Buddha and like the misogynistic attitude towards women, like it comes, it's not to say that it's justified by what's happened, but like it just sort of, it feels like there's a big empty void where like, where the next stage of his life should be. And he does, he doesn't really have a home anymore. And there's clearly a guilt that he has where he isn't going back to Trinidad enough or Trinidad and Tobago enough. And he feels a huge family guilt when one of his family members dies. I mean, there's just so much going on in this book. I do think it's compelling and good whilst also incredibly problematic.
Are you saying if he hadn't gone out to party after the treble, and he really go that high off the treble, that he might have won another treble, basically? He seems to get addicted to partying, basically, from, like, celebrating. He gets addicted to that feeling of celebration and just never having...
Well, he's sort of... He's partying, because, like, after he says, like, I'm not drinking until I'm 21, like, he then does drink after he's 21. When he's at Aston Villa, he does a series of horrible things, like, with Mark Bosnich, that I'm sure we're going to talk about.
Yes, we are.
Like...
Yep.
But like, so it's not as if like the treble was the thing that was like, you know, the concept of partying was open to him once he had achieved everything. Mm-hmm. It's just that it's like, and also he does well in the season after that as well. It just sort of then all falls apart in a kind of confusing way. It's quite hard to decipher, but also it does just raise interesting sort of questions about like, what is the point of any of this? Once you've achieved the very, very best, what is the point of any of this?
I'm glad that this is kind of the antithesis to Roy Keane and that, because that made you think a lot.
That made me think a lot.
One thing I do want to mention when he was a kid, though, which really made me laugh. He talks about Selwyn Archer, who was his neighbour. And did any of you noticed this little mistake in the book? He says, Selwyn Archer... knew my family's financial struggles, helped me to fund the cross-island adventures. On one occasion, he took me to see the Brazilian team Flamingo play a friendly against Trinidad. Come on. That's one mark off Martin Swain for letting autocorrect change Flamengo.
I've got so much womanizing to sort out here. I don't have time to deal with Flamengo.
So... after the treble, I'm going to move on to something that he possibly actually spends more time talking about for reasons you probably will already understand from our opening gambit. He talks possibly more about a certain quadruple than the treble, it seems like, in this book. And that quadruple being apparently a quite well-known story at the time of Dwight having sex with four women in 24 hours. And actually, it's quite misleading, because he has sex with one woman in the first 13. And then it's like 3 and 11, which is the really... If it's one every 6 hours, that would be kind of... Is that often the way, Jack? Sorry, you can say. Is that usually how it goes?
Well, no, in my experience. No, I was going to say, it's like in football matches when they're like, you know, it's like 1-0 after at half time, and then suddenly in the second half they just score loads of
moves. Or you can have sex with four women in the first like 2 hours, and then just like you coast for the next 20
seconds. And everyone around you's like, here we go, he's going to break the record, and then it just kind of peters out.
He really does go into a lot of that, and he says very, very upfront at the beginning, he's like, he's not interested in commitment, as a few people know all too well. He just wants to have fun. And in this story, it's like first one's on a night out, then there's a married woman. It gets like progressively worse. The second one is in some kind of relation. Oh, the second one's got to pick up their kid. That's it. In like an hour. Third one, he meets someone at 6 p.m. who's married. He talks about them like Amazon packages. That's what I thought. Like they kind of come at different. He's like, between about 5:45 and 6, the next one came. That was left for my neighbor next door. But he says like it's not unusual at the time, but Jack, you alluded to something which I think is unusual in his sex life. It's on page 63. Basically, it all seems to take a bit of a turn once he meets Mark Bosnich, by now my crew have been joined by the Australian goalkeeper Mark Bosnich, a character who shared our love for fun and adventures when the hard work had stopped. They were having fun with some girls, as seems to be happening on every single page. Now, a few weeks before this, a technician pal of mine, I knew only as Keith, like protecting his identity, kind of, had been around to fix me up with Sky on my bedroom TV that already had access to several porn channels. Very, very upfront about this, which surprised
me. It's so Partridge, this. Really, I know we always say this about it is. But the whole, like, yeah, he's just, even though he's apparently this, you know, sex god, like, the way he speaks is very much like, he's got porn on my chat. And also,
Keith fitted porn on my telly.
Keith, can you make porn come back on my telly?
And then Keith apparently goes, he asked me if I was aware that I could get a camera link from downstairs up to my bedroom. It does get sinister here. And I thought to myself, sinister. Why not? I was a young man, out for ever more interesting experiences. Yeah, like what, recreating fucking Saw? He swears he hasn't thought about any of that or taping anything before, but then he says Bozzy, who has a freak nature, like convinces them to do it. They start wearing the women's clothes and women start wearing the men's clothes. I think one or two of us might have been hoping it would turn to an orgy, but that never happened. Bozzy got into some spanking and toe sucking and what have you, which is all very freaky. Again, he talks like, that sounds so naff. It doesn't sound like a womanizer saying, sucking toes, how freaky.
Yeah. Oh, what a freaky thing to do, Bozzy. Save some of that spanking for me.
He's gone from Alan Partridge to Austin Powers, the other AP.
Yeah.
He's kind of then it kind of fizzled out, basically.
I love the idea that it fizzled out.
Yeah, it just fizzled out. Sorry, just like, he says only one got lucky.
Like, toe sucking, spanking, we're done.
Yeah. But then that video gets out, apparently. But it must have been just weird watching him up, wasn't it?
It must have been so weird.
Wearing a bra and sucking some poor woman's toes. Very odd, very odd.
Just awful.
But I think that scene and a lot of the book makes all that kind of playboy lifestyle sound so unappealing and so uninteresting. Mm-hmm. It's actually impressive how he does it. There's this incredible bit where he goes to a party. He's like, and the who's who of all the high rollers were there. Actors, sports stars. I could be chatting with Colin Montgomery alongside the cast of Coronation Street. Like, it just sounds rubbish. Colin Montgomery and Les Battersby. It's just like...
Wow.
There's even one bit later on where he gets a Concorde. And for some reason, assumes that a Concorde is like a flying sex plane. Yeah.
Welcome to the sex plane.
And it's just a bunch of old men. He goes, oh, I was really disappointed. It's just everything.
And then he's like, the pilot was like, do you want to come see me land the plane? He's like, do I? It is very, the whole thing is very depressing. The four women in 24 hours does sound just like a really sad version of Mambo Number 5.
Like, oh, God.
A little bit of Married Woman at 6 o'clock.
And then I move on to the woman who has to kick up her kids. But like, it is just the whole thing just comes across as quite sad in a lot of ways. And I don't know whether he's trying to. I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't give Martin that much credit. Maybe Martin needs more. Maybe Martin's too buttoned up, and that's what's making it. But it makes the whole thing feel quite sordid and sad. It's very bleak.
It is bleak, and given how everything, like you say, kind of unravels, not to the point where he's like destitute or anything. He's living a great life now, I think, still. I did read he was declared bankrupt years ago, but now he seems to have money again.
No, he avoided bankruptcy.
That was it. Sorry, James. Yes.
By paying 1.5 mil.
That was it.
In owed tax.
You read the same Sun article I read as well. But yes, I think it's exactly what Gav wanted from the beginning. Remember Gav?
Yeah. But then is Gav thinking, yes, yeah. Excellent.
He's like, oh, I would love Mark Bosnitz to suck my toe. This is what Gav was saying. Has anyone gotten out of context, Dwight York, for me?
Yes, and I think we might all have the same one. Yeah,
right. Okay. Because I texted the group saying it's my favourite ever out of context. What's your question going to be, Tash?
Shall we say what word it begins with to see if we've got the same one?
Depends where we started, because I've started maybe the sentence before.
Oh, I've just taken the one sentence.
Okay, let's see. Tash, I feel like you might have a different one. Or James, if you...
Oh, really?
Yeah, maybe. I've just got a vibe. I'm getting a vibe, Tash, from up between us. We've got a slightly different one.
I mean, mine is my favourite one we've ever had.
Okay, this is good.
From my point of view
as
well.
Well, this is very good.
Yeah.
You go ahead, Tash, then. Let's hear it.
Okay. I would go and have a great night out and end up with a woman who would then be left amazed by me getting out of bed after sex to do 100 sit-ups and press-ups.
That's not the same one, but that is a great line.
I think I remember that. And Patrick Bateman over it.
Yeah, it really is. And that's after he's had sex so many times in the book. He just drops that in. He drops that in. Bizarre.
Oh, that's horrible.
James, did you have one?
I don't want to go. Wait, I don't want to go next.
I got to, okay, I've got Jack,
to find it. Because I texted him and now I can't find it.
Okay,
oh, you text Dwight York.
I've got it. Do you want me to read it, Jack? What I think. What, and you can tell me if you think it's the same one.
I'm sure it's the exact same one. I'm sure okay. It is.
I moved to a 6-bedroom house in the footballer's suburb. Yeah, it's the same one. In the footballer's suburb of Audley Edge, where there was much more seclusion from prying eyes. We enjoyed a memorable housewarming party. In which one of our younger players, Quinton Fortune, became so spooked by the tricks of a magician I hired, he had to leave.
Is this your card? I must go. I have to go. I'm sorry.
It's so good.
I was howling with laughter when I read that line. Oh, Quinton, you delicate, poor delicate boy.
Poor delicate boy.
Oh,
hang on. I had another That's one funny. Because my one is, I think the only other conversation I had with Peter Andre was when he offered to make me a coffee of his own recipe, which when you taste it will make you...
make you
which when you taste it will make you never want to have alcohol again. I just looked at him, gone out. What is this bloke going on about?
That is a great one as well.
It's such a funny
I've
actually got my own recipe for coffee, Dwight. What the fuck are you talking about?
Oh yeah. What could that mean?
I don't know. Yeah. I put the Nescafe in first.
James, do you have one?
I've got an alternative one, yeah. This one really made me laugh. I left a garbled message trying to express all I had to say, but I felt like a bit of a geek speaking into a machine. Why does that make it feel like,
well, like recording a voicemail? He was like a geek.
Yeah, yeah, I think it was to Graham Taylor, wasn't it?
It was to Graham Taylor. Oh, yeah. I remember that. It was to Graham Taylor when he was moving to Manchester United, wasn't it?
It was like on the eve of the final, maybe. The Champions League final.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They tried to ring him, say, thanks, gaffer.
Yes.
Hi, got Graham, voice, it's great to, great voice to talk role. To you.
Yeah.
Well, I felt like a bit of a geek speaking to a machine. What are you talking about, Dwight?
He's not going to go on that podcast then.
No, very true. Very true. Podcast. Oh, Geekland.
Can I have one other one?
Yep.
One other one that I like.
Go on.
As it went skywards, there would just be more running commentary. That's Big Fash's ball. That's a Big Fash, baby. Yeah. Come to Big Fash, baby.
That was very, what was it? The big man's back when Rooney, when he marched into training. Yeah, that is very Rooney. Well, time now for a break, but when we return, we'll be revisiting the 90s tabloid sensation of Dwight and Katie Price, aka Jordan. Hello, James here, and we at Football Book Club want you. That's right, you, to join something special, something exclusive. We want you to join the Football Book Club Club. The Football Book Club Club is the home of even more Football Book Club action. And now, it's cheaper than ever to become a full member at just £3.50 a month. There's three tiers. By signing up to our Bookworm tier, you get an exclusive members-only episode of Football Book Club every fortnight, filling the gap between regular episodes with more book club fun and, frankly, a frighteningly deeper analysis of whatever book we're reading in the episode. Plus, you get access to all the bonus episodes recorded so far. There's over 20 of them on there. Well, 20. And most excitingly, you'll get your hands on a special edition Money Can't Buy bookmark you can put inside your personal copy of Darren Huckabee's Hucks. All that for just £3.50 a month. For context, that's a tenth of the cost of a cameo message from Ian Dowie. And a cameo is what, 30 seconds? For that price, you get 10 episodes. That's 3.5 hours of content. I dread to think what you have to pay to get 3.5 hours of content from Ian Dowie. You'd have to remortgage your house. But I digress. And if that's still not right for you, if you really love the show, you can join the Super Bookworm tier. And if you like the show but don't want to pay that much, you can support the show for just £1 a month on the Casual Reader tier. You won't get the bonus episodes, but yes, you will get that bookmark. Head to patreon.com/footballbookclub for more details. So if you enjoy the show, please consider joining up. It really does help us to keep making the show, because books don't grow on trees. They are trees, kind of. And trees are expensive. But the Football Book Club isn't. So join today at patreon.com/footballbookclub or by following the link in the episode notes. See you back at the clubhouse.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
When your skin feels nourished and glows, you radiate confidence. Osea makes giving your skin a glow up easy with their clean, clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This seaweed-powered duo features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Welcome back to Football Book Club, where we are still reading Dwight York's Born to Score. Having said that title many times now, do we think it's a bit of a double entendre?
Oh. And I actually have an alternative name that you should have called it.
Yeah.
Yorkie, not for girls.
Oh,
that is good.
That's very
that
good.
Is that
good.
Is very good. Yeah. I can kind of see the cover good. As well, like a kind of
yeah.
know, terribly photoshopped chocolate bar. I think I'm
yeah.
Quentin Fortune go,
I have to go.
Tash.
Yes.
Saying on that subject of not being for girls, mm-hmm. Let's talk to the 90s most well-known girl.
Yes.
On these shores.
I mean, I did struggle to separate the art from the artist here.
Mm-hmm.
So I did try and come up with some points that weren't just me calling him a see you next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Because Thank I, you. As I said before, I do think that like some of it is a bit too dark and I don't think we should go into it because he does that though. The, it was very, very toxic. It was very of the time. Mm. And I think we should leave some of it in the past.
With many, so, with many of the Harvey related things we're talking.
The Harvey related
yes.
things.
Yeah, they're very sad. Time it's very in, sad.
He, very sad, very sad. And the trip that they took to Monaco, I think, sounds horrendous, just so anyone knows.
Or was that in Barbados? Which one was that in Barbados?
Well, the one in, but before they go to Barbados, they go to Monaco before they split up. And
with the ring?
He,
that was Barbados.
That's Barbados. Yeah.
Oh, no. It,
he takes her to Monaco and he basically ditches her so that he can pull Rod Stewart's ex-wife for an unnamed married football
player. Oh, yeah,
player,
that's very
and he
strange.
Leaves her in the hotel room. And it's just all very sad. It's all very mean.
It's incredibly sad.
I agree.
But
yeah, we'll steer clear of that.
In my attempt to not rant about him for 10 minutes, I did try and find some things. So, first things first, I put my linguistics degree to use because this man is the master of all, or maybe it's the ghostwriter, but at using the passive voice. You could read this book and think that this man has had the hardest time ever. Like, he's been targeted by managers, he's been used by women, he's been forced to have babies against his will. Like, it's a whole thing where he never says, I did this. It's always, this happened to me. Always.
Unless it's things where he's talking about, I was shagging.
I was shagging, but then she had a baby and I didn't, you know, yes, that's a very good point.
Yeah, and a good distinction.
It's quite hard to do consistently in that way. So fair play to him for that. And secondly, I do have to applaud his honesty because it is quite funny in places. Like, I can't believe how brazenly he names people. You know, with the Ashley Cole one, I was trawling dailymail.com for the dates that he was going out with someone to try and work out who it was. Dwight doesn't give a fuck.
No.
And he's just saying it. Like, yeah, the Peter Andre stuff is really good, where the one laugh that he did get out of me was, he says the first time that he met him, he wanted to throttle him and it was really creepy.
Yeah.
Like, yes, perfect. This is what we want. Yeah, like,
agreed.
When he's being a petty little bitch, it's really funny.
Yeah.
Like, before he delves into being horrible, when he is being a little bit petty, he can be funny. For example, also, why does this man not learn to drive? Why can't he drive?
Yeah, that's
because
he can't drive and have sex in the back of the car at the same time.
Very true.
Yeah, I thought he did. I thought about the number of stories that were.
That guy in Glasgow
in the back of the car.
Yeah.
And being like, that taxi drive was sound because he didn't go to the press when I was clearly having sex with a woman in the back of his taxi. Dwight.
But there,
he did record it all, and we watched it on my Sky TV several times.
Oh God. Yeah. But there is a really funny bit where he's sat in the back of Peter Andre's car.
Katie
Price and Peter are sat in the front and they're driving him to a park so he can walk around with Harvey. Would you not get a taxi rather than get in the car?
At that point in their relationship.
And Peter.
Oh, yeah.
You would, wouldn't you? And in the book, he's like, oh God, it was such an awful journey. I'm like, yes.
Of course
it was.
And sit in the back like a little kid. As well, Peter Andre is driving you through, talking about a special coffee.
I bet Peter does that thing where he like puts his arm behind the headrest.
Oh, definitely.
You know?
Yes.
Now,
definitely.
Me and Katie have been having a little chat, actually.
Yeah.
Quite. And we don't think you've been treating our little kid too well. It's our best Aussie accent.
I found, like, in my research around this, I did find a Reddit thread, though, of people who had, it was kind of anonymized, if you'd ever, like, slept with a footballer. And one of them did say that a footballer that I think is Dwight York used a very funny chat up line on her.
Ooh.
And I want you to see if you can guess the second bit.
Okay.
So the first bit is, you can call me Arsenal.
Because I always promise a lot, but ultimately I will let you down.
Because I'll be really good for 36 games, but the last two were absolutely.
Well, do you know what? You're not right. You're not far off.
Yeah.
What is it?
I start on top but finish second.
Oh,
that's not bad.
That's a good way of doing it. Yeah, that's a good way of doing
it. Yeah, and I think that just from what she said, I think that was Dwight York. I think it was him.
It was Ashley Cole during his Arsenal day.
But I think the Harvey stuff, the Jordan stuff. I mean, I listened to Jordan's podcast to sort of get a sense of what was going on and read a bit of her mum's autobiography. And he does talk about Katie Price's mum in a nice way.
Yeah.
However, she does not reciprocate that in her book. So I do think maybe the truth is somewhere in the middle ground.
Well, actually, I read a few. I mean, I'm sure you're totally right with that, but I read a few things at the time. It seemed like that the mum was quite...
At the time,
yeah. Because the mum said, I saw a few things where she actually did say that I liked Dwight and he was my favourite. Mm. You wouldn't believe it, but he was my favourite of her boyfriends around that time.
Yeah, I think probably since this happened, all the Harvey stuff has maybe tainted it a bit
Yeah,
more,
she's definitely said a lot of things since as well, yeah.
Yeah, I just wish he would have taken Fergie's advice and stopped splashing his life all over the place and concentrated on football because he's not, I don't know, he doesn't take it well when he loses. And I think we know why, because he does talk about that. Do you remember Rhonda?
Yes, Rhonda, yes, at school.
Rhonda. And I think that's where this all started. So Rhonda was his first girlfriend. Mm, and he says, up until this point, everyone wanted to know him. He was like, it was like the jock going out with a cheerleader, I think he says.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he caught her publicly cheating on him when he's like 16 or something. Yep. And she broke his heart.
Yeah.
And from that point, I do think that she sort of ruined him in that way. Like he then couldn't form that bond because he couldn't trust women.
He says it, I think he says he can't trust women after that point. He can't trust anyone. He can't trust anyone. I don't think he specifically says women, but you are right, that definitely is the case with women.
It feels like he's definitely like setting the scene, though, if that makes sense.
That's
he named
true.
An entire chapter after Rhonda. It definitely feels like I'm going like, hey, there's going to be some bad stuff and I'm going to blame it on this girl.
Yeah. The reason I'm bad with women, sure. I mean, is because
this
of women.
Girl.
It's kind of going back to my first point in that he's very passive in the whole thing. Like, this happened to him and whatever. But I think if I'm going to give him any credit, and I really begrudge doing it, but the man did once buy me a can of Coke. So, Rhonda, wherever you are, you created a monster.
Rhonda.
And he does go at lengths to like say, like, this isn't actually the case. I did try to, I know we don't want to get into the Harvey stuff too much, but he does say, you know, X, Y, Z, I was trying to do this. And then Kay says the opposite. And he says the opposite of that. So it's very hard to tell with that.
Yeah, I mean, he does actually say near to the end, I think I wrote it down. Oh, yeah. I have seen far too little of Harvey, but that is because the whole experience has been so negative and unpleasant. Mm-hmm. I've had no enthusiasm to take it on. Like, again...
That's not really.
He help himself elsewhere with the not caring things, because even this, like, his next partner who's got a kid with, who he is quite besotted with, not to be in a, like a total relationship with them, but he seems to quite like them at least. But he doesn't help himself because she goes into labor and he can't remember the hospital she told him. And then he says, like, and he can't ask her parents because of issues. Like, that, he says, it doesn't help.
Yeah.
And then, he, like,
there's a lot of vagueness throughout this. There's a lot of, like, understatements where he's like, I've not been the best father, or like, I can't say I was the best partner. And you're like, yes.
Yeah.
And
agreed. And also, he's not very, throughout the book, he always goes like, oh, I don't know how much I spent. Oh, I could spend any, like, oh, that bar tab, it could have been anything. I didn't look at the bills at that point. And then he very meticulously breaks down his apparent payments to Harvey, which may or may not, they might be true. Yes. I have no idea. But that just is quite inconsistent with the rest of the book.
That's a good point. Yeah. He's goes, very like, much splashing the cash
everywhere.
$3,000
for this, for this computer, for his school and stuff like that. And it's,
I do. I mean, like, the only thing I can think is that, and it sort of goes back to what James was saying, is like, I have no doubt that he is, I think he is the wronger as opposed to the wrongee.
Mm-hmm.
I think that he's a very petty man. I can also see that if you are trying to like answer back for it, then I can see that this would be you sort of being like, I'm going to give you an itemized bill of all the things I've done.
Yes.
It doesn't sound good, and you shouldn't put it in your footballing, you know, book where you basically say like, look how much I love my son. I bought him this computer and this thing and this thing and this thing. But I can also see that if he feels like this tabloid stuff has been, you know, relentlessly negative, he's trying to do his own piece. But... oh, it's just so messy. It is so gross and so sad.
It is. And it's so sad for the child. That's the saddest thing of all. But it's also one thing that I would say is that I think, I'm not saying anyway that Dwight has behaved well. He hasn't, I'm sure, throughout it. I don't know how he's behaved really, but I'm sure it hasn't been good. However, I do think in a relationship where everything is splashed over the tabloids, there's so much hearsay in this. And, you know, Katie Price's career at the time was effectively, you know, selling these quotes to the papers and stuff like that and blah, 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 blah. It must be such a hard environment anyway to have a relationship with someone working that way. So I do think it must be, you know, it's so explosive, everything is there.
You can see now why so many footballers like choose not to date people in the public eye. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like it just, that era, I don't think we'll ever get again.
No. Yeah. It was kind of fun. You think about it. It's not really actually fun. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, that became its own sport, really, didn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Like watching that play out as well. Whereas now, I just don't think people would stand for it anymore.
I agree.
But yeah,
there's too many innocent souls, like Quinton Fortune.
Too many sober vegan footballers, in my opinion. We need some.
Yeah.
Some top shaggers back.
We need to get them back.
Not this far, but just like mid-level shaggers.
And flexitarians. That's what you
have had sex with one woman in the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
Ooh. And a bean burger.
Sex with a bean burger.
Oh, I just wanted to talk about how, well, I mean, we've touched upon it quite a lot already, but just a big kid, isn't he? And we see this a lot with football players.
Yes.
But the way he talks about it is just spending all his money on duplicate clothing for one thing. Like, saying that, you know, like, boys need to spend their money on nice cars. And my favorite bit, which is Jack's already mentioned, when the pilot invites him into the cockpit. It's so funny. He's such a little kid when he does that. He's like, Dwight, do you want to come and sit in there for landing? And he's like, oh, for real? You mean it?
Did all of you imagine him sitting on his lap? Sitting on the pilot's lap?
I imagined him wearing the hat.
Yeah, wearing the hat.
Yeah.
You know, Dwight, if you keep your grades up, you may be flying this plane one of these days. Oh, shucks, mister.
But I think the culture was like even managers like Fergie, who's such a sulky baby as well.
Yeah.
There's a bit where, I can't remember exactly what it is, but I think Dwight York's up for an award. Is it Player of the Year? And Ginola gets it? Is that what it is?
Yes.
I think it's like, so Fergie's like, right, we're boycotting the whole event. None of us are going. It's like, what? Why can't you just be gracious in defeat? Like, it's such a culture of like being emotionally immature, which I found really funny. Like Bradley Cooper still turns up, doesn't he? just go along.
There's,
we're boycotting the whole thing.
I kind of agree with this, and also I the change room, which comes across as quite intimidating in other books, just comes across as really naff in this one as well. There's two examples, which were there's one bit where York goes there and he's like, that was when I got my first taste of the legendary United dressing room humour. After Alex Ferguson had gone, the lad started teasing me. So, are you Fergie's son? Giggsy quips. Dwight Ferguson, is it? Hilarious, first of all. that's great.
So funny.
So funny. So,
I mean, you kind of had to be there, but you know.
And then the next one was, he talks about, where's 177? He goes, David May had a particularly wicked sense of humour. He says about his antics in the tabloids, great read yesterday, Yorkie, he would laugh. Or, come on, Yorkie, what have you got for us this week? What is wicked about that? Nothing wicked in that.
Wicked sense of humour.
Razor sharp.
Also, when he first comes to England from Trinidad and Tobago, he does keep on saying like, oh, it was great, they just fed us nothing but beans on toast.
Yes,
they wouldn't
have rice pudding.
We didn't want rice pudding and beans on toast. We wanted for nothing more. It's like, you are a child at this point, but also like, you're like an 8-year-old boy.
Yeah,
it's just baffling.
That is a very good point. That was a Villa, wasn't it?
That was Villa. And there's another weird thing that happens at Villa where Graham Taylor says like, oh, we're gonna play some cricket now, Dwight, and so they get Dwight to be like a batsman.
Oh yeah.
And then instead of bowling at him, he just gets all the I'm gonna say white English players to throw cricket balls at him.
Yeah,
and goes like, have some of this, the taste of your own medicine, referring to the West Indies being good at cricket.
Yeah,
and Dwight's like, it was very funny. Is it funny or is it?
Yeah, well, you attacked. Yeah, it's not too nice. However, I will say, it was nice to have a book with a positive portrayal of Graham Taylor. I thought. Because so many books we've read have gone, oh, Graham Taylor, what was he like? Whereas this has been, you know, he's really quite a father figure to him throughout this, and he gives him a chance, and he's always there for him. He's quite supportive of him. It was just very
also, famous. What a great find that was.
Yes.
Like just going on a tour of Trinidad and Tobago.
Yeah, I'm finding
like,
Dwight
was
York.
Was it 2 weeks just to, like a training camp or whatever, and finding Dwight York?
I felt so sorry for the other person they brought over from Trinidad and Tobago, who they're like, you haven't made the cut.
Too old, sorry. Bye.
Go back there. Yeah.
And Dwight also is also like, I think he works at the airport now. Yeah. Anyway. it's like, oh God.
Yeah, that is sad.
It is the Graham Taylor stuff is also weird because he does like there's a bit where he's like, what do you think, Graham? Shall I go back and play for Trinidad and Tobago? And Graham's like, I haven't talked to you in about 10 years. Why are you calling
Who
me about
this?
He's like, it's very very strange. Yeah. Very strange, very sweet.
Yeah, Graham Taylor almost definitely doesn't think he has the same relationship with Dwight York as Dwight York does with Graham Taylor. did this book change you?
Yeah, actually it did. It's probably one of the more impactful books, I would say.
Okay.
It made me think about 90s or noughties culture again and really delve into the Katy Price stuff, which was very depressing. But also I also find that the sort of his relationship with like with success very interesting. So I actually quite enjoyed this one.
And it was more authentic 90s experience than say that, you know, that the Beckham one we read a while ago that was a bit of a time capsule, but you didn't get any like emotion to it. It was just
There's definitely a lot of lying, I'd say, and there's a lot of like
a lot
false
of love.
Memory of it. There's a lot of lying, a lot of love. But there's it's weird because he's like brutally honest but also brutal and not really honest about himself, but equally that somehow that still comes across as authentic, and I can't quite explain it. So it's a tough one. It's a tough, strange one.
I think it feels authentic because I can imagine that is exactly how he is in person.
Yeah,
you'd never quite know what was true and what was him being a bitch, I don't think.
And some books can't capture that. Some books don't capture realism.
Yeah,
and this does,
but this I imagine is exactly what he's like.
And also that thing where you can kind of believe that you, when you're reading it, you're like, yeah, that makes sense. And then you think about it like later and you go, oh God, no, wait. That's really disturbing what he said.
It's a bit that, you know, the thing with the frog in the hot water and it's, and by the end he was saying all this awful stuff. And I was like, God, this is just washing over me at this point.
Wait, I don't know what the frog in the hot water thing was. What?
The frog in the hot water. The time Dwight York drank a...
You put a frog in a pan of water, and if you heat it up slowly, it just chills. Well, it doesn't chill it. Oh, it doesn't
no, the exact
chill.
Dwight York didn't do this, did he?
No.
Right.
It's a metaphor.
It's a metaphor.
Oh, okay. Oh, I know metaphors.
So, metaphors are basically when you say one thing, but you're talking about something else.
And a frog? What's this?
don't worry about it, James. Don't worry.
It's been a long series.
I did enjoy reading it, and I do think one thing is it kind of shows how far we've come in 15 years, really. Mm. Like this, you wouldn't get away with this anymore.
Yeah, that's probably true.
But I did find it interesting. I did. It was very thought-provoking in a way. I think he's a strange man that has a lot of demons, and I think he puts them out onto other people rather than into his craft.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. But not Andy Cole. Go, what a partnership they were. rating out of 10.
Oh,
it's a hard
tough.
One, isn't it?
This is hard.
I'm going to jump in and give it an 8 because I enjoyed it.
For the book, I'd give it 1, and morally, I feel like I can't.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I did enjoy reading it, so I'm going to give it a 7.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm going to be a coward and say 7 as well.
Okay.
Not that you were a coward. I'm saying that I'm a coward for just basically saying I'm not going to go beyond that.
Yeah. I know. We all know you'll mark it down at some point, Jack, when you win the quiz in a minute.
No,
when you win the quiz.
This one, I have no idea how I would actually mark it. Yeah. If I had to have the option of marking it up or down, like, I don't know what I'd do.
In a world of beige reads, it's a colourful read and it's fun.
It's a very colourful read.
Yeah.
James Balgen.
Yeah, fine. 5.
Bloody hell.
Come on.
I cannot predict what is going on with
Show
James.
Some character, boy.
I didn't enjoy it that much.
Oh.
I didn't enjoy it that much.
I'm sorry. Is that too much reading lately?
So, and Joakim? Okay, this is my opinion.
It's okay.
Fine.
You can have your opinion. I'm sorry.
I just... Oh.
You think about Quentin Fortune again?
Oh, wait, can you do the Peter Andre again? That might bump it up to a 6.
Oh, no. let me figure out the numbers. 8 plus 7 plus 7 6. Plus 6. That is...
Can you tell us how to make a coffee?
28.
Yeah.
Oh, my special coffee. What goes in this?
Your special coffee. You'll need to drink alcohol again.
you got 7. You got 7 overall.
Oh,
Dwight got 7. This week on the quiz, you're named... It's the quiz time. Yay. This time on the quiz, this week on the quiz, you're named after Dwight's glamorous drinking partners. Jack, you're Carmen Electra. Tash,
oh, no.
You're Ricky Ponting. And James, you're Norris off Coronation Street. here we go. There's no evidence that he drank with Norris, but I like to imagine that it was Norris. What milestone is Dwight talking about here? It was extremely enjoyable and represented the start of many such adventures.
Carmen Electra.
Yep.
It's the first time he had sex, yep. Because I've underlined the fact that he said it was extremely enjoyable.
I know, right? What? What an awful description.
Oh, what an enjoyable thing to have done. My goodness. We should do that again. That's the last time we're doing that. Not. That was great.
Oh, man. God, really, what we were urged to sleep with Jack after that, actually. Is,
yeah. That's what I say after each time.
God, too sexy. Who had the worst dress sense of any footballer Dwight's encountered?
I'm going to guess Carmen Electra.
No, I don't know.
That's your name. Sorry. I was going to say mean. yes, the answer, Jack.
Ugo Ekiog?
Nope. Oh, poor you, Ugo.
Rest
we love that
peace.
Guy, yeah.
I know, but there was a very sweet bit where he says Ugo Ekiog takes edges to read the menu at restaurants. Which
that was very
such
sweet.
A slam.
Yeah, I'll give you. He played for Villa with him, I think. He was probably an older pro towards the end of his career. There, TalkSport host,
Carmen Electra, Paul Merson.
Nope, no. I'm going to take away Dean Saunders, and apparently he'd say, "Yeah, but have you seen the label?" That's what he'd say.
Yes, that
rings. Okay, we're going back in the gutter. Who is Dwight's dream woman to get it on with? And he hopes to do
I
it.
Know.
Yes.
Norris on Coronation Street.
Yep.
It's Natalie Imbruglia.
Correct. Very correct. Yeah.
Forgot my bloody name. Ricky Ponting.
Ricky Ponting.
Ricky Ponting, yeah. Sorry. Yes, Balgin, you are correct. It is Natalie Imbruglia. Sorry, okay. what is Jordan's favourite genre of film? What is Katie Price's favourite genre?
Oh, Ricky Ponting.
Yes.
Oh.
Vampire films.
Correct. Horrible vampire horror movies. Yeah. That's what describes them. Very funny. Oh, this is close. It got 2 points I have to play with. It's 1-1 at the moment between all of you. What is the name of Dwight's housekeeper?
Carmen Electra.
Yes.
Norma?
Is correct. Always gets those. You're so good with
I know because I've written down saying Norma is Dwight's intelligence. because Norma is the one who reads all the papers.
Yes, that's very true.
For him.
And finally, what was Dwight's last text from Roy Keane after he was sacked as United manager?
Carmen Electra.
Yep.
Go fuck yourself.
Go fuck yourself is correct. It was very, very funny. You pulled out again. 3-1.
Just like Dwight.
Very enjoyable.
You've got the last Ken song of the series, my friend.
Oh, lovely. Lovely.
You know what? You can all listen to it as a treat. Usually I make you leave the room. but here we go. This to the tune of Through the Wire by Kanye. Sampling... Ooh. Shaka Khan. Who's going to get cancelled first, Dwight York or Kanye? Well, I guess it's already
hang on.
There's some serious notes in this, James.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. What was I going to say? We got a message the other day saying, I really like Ken's songs because they're so long and drawn out and then the footballer comes at the end. Whereas this is the absolute opposite of that. It's the first word. We're going to have that. So the tune of Through the Wire. Zeki Fryers got his eyes upon the ball. There's no chance you'll make it through. He'll gladly risk it all. Zeki Fryers. Okay, once you get the name actually at the beginning, it's really hard to bother.
You sound
it's like telling a joke. You start with the punchline. Yeah. It's like no. The setup's very funny. You're like, yeah, but we're all here for the punchline.
Right, James, the way you were singing it then sounded like when they forced Michael Cera to sing on Superbad.
I take it. Right down to the wire. It's all Zachy Fryers. There we go. Remember Zachy Fryers?
Yeah. Lesson learned. Barely. Don't start with the name.
Don't
start with the name. But good, though. I forgot he existed. Played for Spurs as well.
He did play for Spurs.
And Palace.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's all for this week's episode. Put you back in a fortnight. No, we won't. It's the end of the series. if you can't wait that long, being a year or so, join the Book Club Club on Patreon for 1 week. BookQM is the club. Get a brand new exclusive bonus chat episode every other week where we chat even more about the book. It's $3.50 to join. It's on patreon.com/footballbookclub. And if you join now, we won't charge you throughout the summer, of course. Until the next series comes along. And you can, catch up on all the old classic episodes on there. There's about 40 on there for you to enjoy. In the meantime, do get in touch with us at Footy Book Club on Twitter. There's a lot. Instagram at Football Book Club. Send us your thoughts, your author footballer puns, Ken's on request. Actually, listen to them all. We'll probably just about see you through to the next series. That's it. We're done for the series. We're going to chat more in detail about a roundup of the series and our favourites and stuff. But did anyone have a favourite book this series? I think statistically, Roy Keane came out on top. In terms of numbers. Oh, dear. not enjoyable.
Not enjoyable. That actually really upsets me.
Okay, well, have you got
a table?
I won't lie. I forgot to do it from the first episode, and I thought about going back and listening to the end of every episode and figuring out the scores. And then I thought, nah, I've got too much to live for. So
no one's going to ask me about that. Certainly not one of my other podcast hosts.
I think what was it? I did write somewhere. I think Roy Keane came out on top, then Walcott or Colleen. I think Colleen technically was.
I liked Colleen. Colleen feels like a really nice antidote to this book, I'd say.
Yep, that's very true. Yeah, it's kind of the response to it all.
Mm. It's the fuck you right back to them.
Yes. Good. I love a little Frankie
and Eamon.
This is
the second time we've mentioned Eamon and Frankie this
year. Yeah, that's come up.
It's timeless classic.
Let's get Ken Zong on Eamon and Frankie. We'll get him working on that over summer. Tash, James, quick one word. Favourite book?
You did this? Oh, Lampard's Magic Football, absolutely.
Oh, God.
Like nothing else we've ever
That read. Was fun to do, to that be fair. To that was very fun to
that
do.
That was a funny episode. Tash, did you have one? Or was it Colleen?
Yeah, obviously Colleen.
Okay.
But I did actually, I have actually enjoyed quite a lot of these books this season. I think I too. Yeah.
We enjoyed Walcott, didn't we? Did we enjoy
Walcott? Yeah, I like Walcott. Yeah, Walcott was fun. Yeah, Walcott was fun.
There's been some good ones.
That's a joke. That's not
worst guest. Who was the best host? Me on the for Patreon one episode or James for the rest?
Absolutely right, Tash. You.
Yeah, that's the end of this episode. I haven't got time for anything else. But thank you, everyone, for reading all the books. It's been a joy reading these largely terrible books with you, as always. And thanks, as always, to our listeners for sticking with us. And for listening and for sending all your lovely messages throughout the series and for sharing us and everything. Thank you so much. We will be back some point. We're not sure when. But hang in there. And thank you to all those who joined the club as well, the book club. You're all incredibly special to us. Yeah. All of you are special, but they're slightly more special. And we will be back soon. Until we are back, guys. Any last words?
Very enjoyable.
It was. This series
it was.
It was
enjoyable.
It was.
Yeah.
Last one wasn't. That was a joke. Thanks for listening to Football Book Club. It featured James Bug, Jack Bernhardt, Natasha Frisco, and James Bowgen. Thanks to Dwight York for writing the book. The theme music, Hills Behind, is the work of Silent Partner and is using the Creative Commons 4.0 license. We'll see you soon for Series 6. Until then, book. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.